Welcome to Inspired Cleft Talk. My name is Lizzie. I'm a solution-focused hypnotherapist. I run Inspired to Change Edinburgh, and I'm very excited to have on this episode an absolute powerhouse, an all-around fantabulous human being, Nora Abu Hassan. Nora is author of Born to Smile, a memoir detailing the triumphs, the challenges, and journey to self-acceptance growing up with a cleft lip and palate. She's also a public speaker, social activist, Smile Train ambassador, RMHC Gift of a Smile ambassador, and host of the Born to Smile talk show web series, which I've been following for a while now. And I cannot wait to learn more about all of the beautiful roles that she has and all the brilliant work she does raising awareness and inspiring empowerment. Welcome, Nora. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you to you for having me on the show. It is such a privilege, and I'm so honored to be here talking to you, Lizzie, from Inspired to Change.
Thank you. And I feel like I've been what like I said before, I've been watching your talk show for a while now, and I noticed that when you have international guests, you always start by saying, "Thank you for coming on so early. Thank you for coming on so late." And I feel like it's my turn to say to you, "Thank you for coming so late," because it's 10 o'clock there now, isn't there?
It's channel 6,
Oh,
but it's not
fabulous.
that late. It's not that late. It's all right. It's still okay.
Perfect. Well, I want to
Yeah.
start by asking you about this web series. When did you start? When did you create it, and what was your inspiration for creating this web series?
We started it I think in 2020, during COVID lockdown. Yes. It's actually because I wanted to create awareness for the community. And it is before that I had a book, and the book went onto the market in 2019, end of 2019. And we started doing book signing, meet the author at the bookstores. And then 2020, COVID came, and we were all in lockdown. Okay. But what happened was I was invited to other talk shows, radio shows, to talk about Born to Smile and the book, because we couldn't get out of our home to go into all the bookstores. Yes. And then when I started talking on other people's show, and I said, why don't I start my own show and invite the community to come and talk about their journey? Because no, I'm not the only one in the world that has or born with a cleft lip and palate. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted other people to come and talk about their journey, their experiences. And initially, it was the local, the Malaysians. And they said, hey, you know, why don't I invite other people from other countries? And how that's how it started. And I invite the mothers, I invite the cleft affected adults, I invite the children, and then the organizations pertaining to the community, like Smart Train, Ronald McDonald House of Charities, and the likes, yes.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think it's amazing to get that 360 perspective, like you say. So having the children, the cleft affected adults, their parents. I think you also had a surgeon on one point,
Oh
didn't you?
yes, I forgot about that. Yeah, we also invite surgeons. We had ENT, we had plastic surgeons, maxillofacial surgeons, speech therapists, and we are trying our best to look for a child psychologist, but you know, it hasn't been easy, but I'm sure we'll get that someday, somehow.
Oh,
Yeah. Yeah.
wow.
The surgeons does come on the show as well. Yeah. Because currently the show is in collaboration with Ronald McDonald House of Charity, Smart Train, and also the Malaysian Society of the Plastic and Reconstructive Surgeons. So they're very kind in giving us the connection if you want the surgeons to come in. They are currently a Smart Train's partner. So anybody, anyone from Malaysia, even if not or holding a foreign passport, can actually go and do their surgeries at LMC, which is Smart Train's partner in Malaysia.
Oh, wow. So those are
Oh.
sponsored operations that are provided.
Correct. Correct.
Amazing.
Correct.
Oh,
Yes.
that's so good.
And when I started talking online, Ronald McDonald House of Charities, I'll talk about that in a bit, saw me from afar, and then they connected with me, and they said, Nora, why don't we collaborate? Because they have four pillars. Yeah, it is Ronald McDonald House of Charity was a charitable body that was funded by McDonald's worldwide. So everywhere you go in the world, they will have a Ronald McDonald House of Charities. Yeah. And they have four pillars. One is autistic, one is what do you call this, back to school, where they give school equipment, uniforms, utensils to the lower income community children. And the Ronald McDonald House, they've got three in Malaysia, where the people from the lower income community can bring the children and stay at the house practically for free of charge. And the fourth pillar is Give or Smile, which is supporting the children in Malaysia to go and seek medical treatments, i.e. the surgeries, the orthodontist, the ENT, the speech therapy from babies up to 18, because the lower income may not be able to, are not viable financially. So we give them the support. That's what Ronald McDonald House of Charity does. So they said, Nora, we're looking for someone to create awareness for our program. So what I do on my show, I create awareness for them and also invite the community to come and talk about their life experiences.
Oh, amazing. Well, yeah, you've raised awareness and then some. How fantastic to be part of such an amazing initiative to be able to give that treatment right through from birth to 18 years old. Have you met any of the children or young people that have benefited from that?
Oh, yes, because we have events with Ronald McDonald House of Charity. Like last year, we had a Hari Raya celebration, which is equivalent to Christmas. You know, Christmas, but it's Hari Raya. And then we had the World Smile Day. We invited the current patients and also the mothers to come in and celebrate World Smile Day with the relevant sponsors and organizations that funded the program. So the children are there, they're dancing, they're singing. We had a fashion show, we're mingling, we're networking. So the adults, we had some from the adults from the community, the children, the mothers. So we're just exchanging our experiences and things. It was amazing. It was an amazing day for the mothers, the families, and the children as well. Yeah.
I can imagine. It must have been so full of emotion and just
incredible,
right?
I really love doing what I do. I really love, you know, reaching out and connecting with the community, whether it's mothers or whether it's families or the children. Yes.
Yeah, and if you really see that, even the way that you talk about it, you just come alive when you're speaking about it. It's amazing.
Well, that's the reason.
Well, I also wanted to talk, and I love this idea of like taking that community aspect in, because it really does take a village. When you're a child growing up with a cleft, you have that huge team and you have your family with you, and you're all really part of that experience. But I also wanted to talk to you about your book, which I read a couple of weeks ago now and absolutely loved it. It was amazing.
Thank you.
And I think it's just, what I love about it is it really feels like when you're reading it, it's like I'm sitting opposite you in a coffee shop and you're just telling me your story. It's very immediate and you don't shy away from the bigger issues as well, like some of the more uncomfortable or even painful issues that many of us as cleft affected individuals go through, especially at a young age. So thank you very much for being so candid about it and sharing your story with us. And I read it thinking, I wish I'd had this 20 years ago, because it would have been such a healing experience reading it for me. And I'm dying to know, what was your decision to, or what spurred you to write it? And what was the writing process in itself like? Did you feel like you gained some insights about yourself? Did the book turn out the way that you expected it to? What was that journey like for you writing it?
Well, it wasn't an overnight decision, admittedly. You know, before I decided to actually write the book, I had to go for a healing journey. You see, where in the book I said that there was a moment of my time that I didn't talk about it openly. Not even to my husband, my former husband. I mean, I'm no longer having a husband. But we're in a good space anyways. I was married to him. And only after 15 years, I decided to open up to tell him, you know what? I am a cleft afflicted adult. You know? But because of that silence, you see, maybe you can resonate with me. I never really had the opportunity to actually talk about my cleft or about what I was going through. The emotional bullying, you know, the mocking and the teasing for the very longest time. Not even to my mother, okay? She was there to support me. She brought me to the hospitals to, you know, for surgery. She was there with me in the room and to the orthodontist, ENT and whatnot. But I love her to bits and, you know, but I think upon her side, she herself was not able to talk about it because she herself went through trauma. You know, and that's another story altogether. The blaming game, you know, why do you, you know, why did you give me a child like this, or why the grandparents, why is my grandchild like this, blah, blah, blah. So I was not able to talk about it for the very longest time. And that was eating me up slowly. Yeah, it was inside me. You know, there was a moment where I said, hey, you know what? I'm angry. You know, I'm angry at myself for not being able to accept, I would say, my birth destiny at that point of time. And I was beginning to express my anger or projecting my anger to my children. I got married, I had kids. There was a moment that I said, you know, Nora, you really need to get help. And I acknowledged that I had a problem with my birth destiny and accepting, and I looked for a solution. I embarked on a healing journey. So in the book, I started on in 2000, I went A, B, C, D. I mean, we can talk about the whole journey. It took me a couple of years. And then one day, the last journey or the retreat that I went was in Phuket in 2007. We spent 5 days with a motivational guru, yoga enthusiast, Kip Archimedes, who happens to be from the UK. And if you look at the book, he was also one of the reviewers. And I was already, I would say, at the last lap of my healing journey. And he gave us an exercise and he said, what do you see? Where do you see yourself 5 years from today? That was in 2017. Write down three or four, you know, things that you like to go, short-term goals and long-term goals. And I said, you know what? I want to write a book about my journey of my cleft. You know? And to cut a long story short, the book went into the market in Malaysian market, the physical book, in end of 2019. And what inspired me to write the book, I kind of felt that, you know, it was therapeutic for me. And I thought that if I were a child, or if I was a teenager at that point of time, having these emotional issues, this not being able to talk about it, this silent treatment, it would have maybe made my journey a bit easier, because I wanted to pluck the thought processes of a person that has been there and there now. And obviously, at that point of time, 1980s, there weren't any book on cleft.
No,
you know, there were no memorial on cleft. But of course, if you go to the stores, there's people talking about clefts. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not important. They are absolutely survivor of plane crash or domestic abuse or, you know, sexual abuse or whatever it is, but none on a cleft.
Yes.
When I read the book. But maybe now, I really, really hope from the bottom of my heart that people can actually start doing their own memorial. You know, it is therapeutic. And I felt liberated as well. I was, you asked me how I felt when I was writing the book. It was a bittersweet moment. You know, there were moments that I felt liberated. Right now, I can just write down all these emotions that I've been putting inside me for the very longest time, you know. But at the same time, when I was flashing back what happened when I was 7, what happened when I was 9, what happened when I was 16, blah, blah, blah. It's a bittersweet moment, to be honest with you. You know, visualizing, you know what, I'm coming back from school and then there are these group of children basically calling you names and things like that in front of other children, you know. But I had to face that demons, because you see, I wanted to be raw and vulnerable as I possibly can, and there's no sugar coating in the book. It is what happened. And I think a lot of people that's going through the journey that I think can understand and can resonate that. You know what? You went through the same thing as well. It could be similar, but not the same, or vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter. I mean, we all have our own individual journeys, but there's definitely common themes that I see when I talk to other cleft affected individuals. In your book, I was like nodding away at everything you were saying, because it was, I mean, it was so similar to my experience. And I can really relate to you about the concept of silence. And that's something I spoke in about in the last episode, is really holding on to that silence. It does eat you up inside, and you feel like it's almost like you're playing a role when you go out in the world, because it's this whole unspokenness about the cleft. And I love what you said about any silence, even polite silence, is a form of negative reinforcement. And that really put into words something that I was finding difficult, or when I look back on my past experience, found difficult to grapple with. But it's such a good point. And what I really want to know, what helped you open up about your cleft to your husband and to your family? What was that?
At
Was
that
it
point
like
of
a
time, that point of, yeah, because I, like I said, if I didn't do anything about it, I would be exploding. You know, I was walking on eggshells already, and I said earlier on that I was projecting my anger on my kids. You know, they were young at that point of time, and I said, I didn't have my kids to be like, this is not what I bargained for as a mother. Do you know what I'm saying? And it wasn't fair for the kids to get my, they were, they can't, they are not my punching bag. And I realized that whenever I lash in anger at them or being so reactive, it's not their fault. It's me. I'm angry at me. And there's something that I hold on for the very longest time. So I acknowledged and I said, Nora, you just need to do something about this. And that's when, like I said, the healing journey began.
Amazing,
Yeah.
yeah. And what
Yeah.
was it?
Yeah.
How did it feel? Because I feel, certainly from my point of view, when I started opening up about it, it felt like the most terrifying thing in the world. And I had all these images in my head of how people would react and feeling, you know, even expecting rejection in some ways, which seems ridiculous now thinking about it. But the moment I started opening up about it was a breath of fresh air. It felt like I could really show up as myself now. And it doesn't mean that my cleft defines me, but it's certainly a huge part of my history and it is a huge part of who I am. So to be able to talk about that openly, as terrifying as it was when I first started doing it, it really felt like a weight off my shoulders. I wonder if it's the same for you.
Absolutely. I totally get you. I totally get you. But the moment that you want to talk about it, the moment of, yes, I want to, but I haven't done it yet, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. I am not going to deny that totally. And the moment, you know, Lizzie, when I start, because, you know, I have a Facebook, I had my Facebook from 2012, yes. And it was all about my journey. It's all about my, you know, dinners, family gatherings, you know, whatever it is, lunches. And I've never really spoken about the cleft or the book on my social media, right? But when the book came out, I said, hey, you know what? I need to talk about it on the book. I need to tell my followers that I've got the bond to smile. And that day, when I, it, the first thing was an interview by Malaysian Daily, where they you know, we kind of pitched them and said, hey, we want to, you know, open the chapter about Nora Bahsan's Born to Smile. You know, obviously we need to let people know about the existence of the book. And it was just one write-up like, hey, thank you to, you know, Sunday Mail or Malay Mail for interviewing me about my book. And that moment when I put it into my Facebook, the very first time, I'll tell you, I was nervous as hell. I am not going to kid you. That was 3 years. That was in 2019, somewhere in August, September, before the book hit the market on the bookstores in October 2019. So I think I started opening up in August 2019, and it was horrible. It was terrifying. Like, really, really, you wrote the book. You know, the book's going to come out now. You know, we've got the book now, and you need to, you know, tell people that you've got Born to Smile. And yeah, but after you've overcome that you know, that space, that from A to Z, okay, all right, you know what, I've done it. But I am not going to deny, it was terrifying, even though I've written the book, you know what I'm saying, because it has shaped, you know, a lot of us to who we are right now. Yeah, and there's nothing to be ashamed about it, you know. There's nothing, to be honest with you. Or even a
Absolutely.
picture, you know, someone's born with autistic, ADHD, dyslexia. We are all here to embrace all differences, not just cleft lip and palate.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love. I've got so many questions are putting me off now, but I'm gonna try and keep it on course. Oh yeah, I wanted to ask you. Reading your book, this is why I called you a powerhouse at the start of this podcast, and just
Oh
through watching you as
God.
well. You've had such a full life. Like you've had, it feels like you've had so many lifetimes within this relatively short that life because you're still relatively young. And I'm dying to
No.
know, and I'm dying to know, what is your proudest achievement, throughout your life, and which period of your life would you like to live again and why?
Well, if it's not collab related, I think my most proudest achievement is having my three kids. I am a mother of three, you know, but I can tell you that when I had the three kids, I mean, I think that would be my proudest moment, becoming a mother. I never thought that I never thought if people were to look at me, they would feel that I'm outgoing, I love going out, which is true, which is true. And I never thought that I was going to be maternal. But when I had the kids, I some of my maternal issues just hit me. In fact, I left my corporate world, was working with the bank. And then when Naja was born, I was still pregnant with her. And then a year, I went back to work. And I was coming back late and staying back late because at that point of time, the bank was computerizing and coming back at even 12 midnight, 1 a.m. And I stopped working and I stayed home for 4 years. And I started, but then, I can't stay home for the longest time. I thought that I had to do something before I went crazy. And I opened the Montessori kindergarten. I stayed home for 4 years though and I had a second child. And I started, kindergarten because I wanted to have time. I wanted to have something to do career-wise, and being with the children as well. So it was, for me, it was ideal at that point of time because it was only a half-day job kind of thing. So in the morning, the kids were with me, they were with me at the school. And then in the afternoon, I came back at 2 p.m. and I was with the children. So it suited me at that point of time, that phase of my life.
Can you explain a bit more about your personal reflections and your experience running the Montessori nursery? And what advice would you give to early years educators who have children with CLEFs or other visible differences in their classes? And what can they do to create an environment that is supportive of them and possibly their parents if needed?
I mean, we do know that positive parenting is essential for us to bring up positive children, yes. But then when the children start going to school, it is not just the parents, it is a three-way thing. The parents, the academician or the center, and also the children themselves. So with the cleft child, I mean, talking about, I will talk about grade, what's that in UK, grade one? Is that seven?
Oh
Grade
yeah,
one.
we say primary one to primary seven,
Primary
yeah,
one, yeah,
primary one.
primary one. Because I could be wrong, but when I was before primary one, when I was in kindergarten, I didn't really have much recollection. Do you know what I'm saying about at that point of time? I didn't know that maybe I was having a cleft, yeah, and it was a very such a long time ago. But when I went to grade one, then I started to realize that okay, Nora, she's well with a cleft, she's not the same maybe with the other peers. And what I wished I wanted to, if I could turn back the clock, was that we're not asking for special treatment. We really are not. That's why I say we're not here for sympathy. We're just here for understanding. If the academicians at that point of time would just understand what we were going through, because Lizzie, I mean, mocking and teasing happened a lot in school, for most of us, yes? And if the teacher would just have that little bit of sensitivity about the child, maybe looking. I mean, I was a very awkward child when I was in school. I didn't really have many friends, do you know what I mean? And I was always put at the last of the class. Yeah. And honestly, I didn't even feel that the teachers, being real, wanted to even talk to me that much, among many, many kids in the classroom. So it was that she's there in the class, but she's there in the class. You know what I'm saying? I don't know whether you experienced that yourself when you
Yes.
were in grade one, grade two, grade three. That went on for the very longest time. So if, again, back to the academicians, if they were to be a little bit more sensitive and understand that, hey, you know what, we do exist, we are here, give us a chance as well, and on occasions where I wrote in the book that I didn't want to go to school because I just couldn't take the mocking, the teasing, or the bullying. And I just said, you know what, mom, if I wear this, I don't think I can even function. Do you know what I mean? And my mother would, yes, admittedly go to the school and talk to the principal that Nora doesn't want to school because she's been, you know, she's been mocked or she's been teased and bullied. But I've never even recalled there was any moment that the teacher would come to me and ask me, Nora, who bullied you? Why are you feeling like this? Is there something that I can help you? So I had to handle my own, you know, feeling of sad or angry or shame or unworthiness because the bullying came with names. Do you know what I mean? The bullying, I mean, in Malaysia, we had also names for the clapping. I don't know why it is in United Kingdom. Maybe, you know, everything, you know what I'm saying? Every language has a name, you know, with the UCL and ours was our names. And whenever I go back to school and I said, oh, they call me A or they call me B, and I look at the mirror, I said, but yeah, I am A. Because again, remember, our transformation is gradual.
Yeah.
I took 30 years from here to there. Do you know what I mean? With canover surgeries and blah, blah, blah. So, and, you know, a young child going to a school where she wants to be comfortable with her friends or peers didn't feel that way. And if the teacher were just to be a little bit more alert and aware of what we were going through, it would have been easier to. That's why what I do now, because I really do not want the children now to go through what we all did.
Yes,
You
absolutely.
know what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know what the teachers were thinking at that point of time. Now I have an idea. Maybe I should call the teacher in, you know,
So
and see her perspective, you know. But what I hear even now, when the mothers comes in, whether they're local or whether they're from, you know, not from Malaysia, that some teachers are still not aware of the condition, and we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
It is not about telling them what to do. It's just about creating awareness to them and making them again understand what this child is going through. And can you collaborate? Can you partner with us, the mother, the child, and you as a team? That is why it is important for us to, I mean, we are here again to share our experiences, but whether people understand and accept, that's another story altogether. But if, like I said again, it is the teamwork and the partnership of the parents as well as the academicians at school for the child. We're in it together, you know, so there has to be an open communication with the academician, with the center, and the home ground. But you see, at that point of time, maybe the mothers didn't know how to handle it. Maybe the mothers didn't want to talk about it. Maybe the mothers had issues accepting it. You see, it comes back to the root cause. It comes back to the ground. So, I mean, I know, again, like I said, I'm not denying that it is a journey for the mothers. This thing about this cleft journey, it's a whole family thing. It's not just us. The cleft afflicted child, adult, whatever, it is the family. So the family has come to support. So if a mother comes and says, hey, I don't know how to handle this, and we're okay with that, we're okay with the acknowledgement. We appreciate the sincerity and the rawness of I don't know what to do. So again, we are here to give you the assistance if you need it from us.
And Have you worked with mothers one to one, or have you worked with mothers in any in other capacities?
I mean, what I do, you know, currently, like I have my bi-monthly talk show, right? And I like I said, we've seen the guests. It could be the mothers, it could be the cleft, the adults, could be the child, and the mothers. We will have our chat as well before that. And like I said, I've never. It's not a pressure thing that, you know, would you like to come on my show? Because I belong to the Facebook social group in Malaysia and also, you know, in the States and wherever it is. And I find out the mothers, and there they are showing their children's photos, you know, how they are. And I kind of sense that these mothers are more ready to be open about it. And then when I come in and I say, hey, I have a show, would you like to come and talk to us about it? But they are open as well, you know. Some of the mothers told me about the stigmatization, the discrimination, and the not so pleasant words in the hospital themselves. So see, the mothers are being given the opportunity to talk about how they feel. You know, some stories are like that. Stories are like this. You know, it's okay. You know, and they are what do you call this? They are they should be able to talk about it
Yeah.
in all rawness, in all
Yeah.
sincerity, in all authenticity.
What advice would you give them to seek out that support, to be able to have those conversations? What would you say?
I think I'm just going to talk a bit about my own mother before I answer that.
Yeah,
I
sure.
think one of the many factors that she was not able to talk about it openly when she had me was she was not ready for it. You know, 1960s, there was no scanning, right? Right now, mothers are more lucky that scannings are available, that they can detect the child in their womb, that, you know, I think it's first trimester or something, that the child will be born with a cleft. Is to seek, usually the pediatrician will already refer the mothers to what do you call it? No, sorry, the gynecologist will already refer the mothers to a pediatrician, right? And if you need help, I will always say in the book, seek external help. Seek external help, okay? Talk to somebody about it. Because I said, I appreciate the fact that it is not an easy journey, but I also would like to say that don't blame yourself. Don't blame. That is important, because again, the traumatizing journey for my mother was because society pressure at that point of time, she felt she was the reason that she had a child with a cleft. You know what I'm saying? I don't blame her, because everybody, maybe the in-laws, maybe the cousin-in-law, maybe the sister-in-law kind of thing, or because of you kind of thing. So what we say impacts the other person. That as a young mother, it was not easy to hear those words.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So for the very, very longest time, she felt that she was the person, she was, you know, she was the reason why she had a child with a cleft. And again, one of the reasons why I did the book was also to give tribute to her that, you know what, it's not your fault. You're not the one to be blamed. Mom, this is for you. We are, like, for those listening outside there, we went through the journey. Trust me. Trust me. But what's important is that if you feel that you are, you know, having challenges, it's okay. Take your time. But I would say that it's acknowledging that I have an issue with my self-acceptance. Do you know what I'm saying? I acknowledge that I'm kind to myself, or acknowledging to myself that I have an issue. I am traumatized. I am dealing with my inner demons or my childhood demons. Now, what do I do about it? And I also said in the book that if you need to knock at 10 doors, knock it until you find a solution. It's like if you have a headache, if you have gastric, you need to get the medication for it.
I loved at the end of the book you said self-acceptance is a journey and you're on the final lap. What does that lap look like now?
It looks, I would say, well, it has been a journey. It wasn't something that it didn't happen overnight, but I am in a good space. I'm, you know, I'm pretty happy with the last lap, and with God's grace, hopefully I can, you know, God's given me the strength, the inner strength to continue with my advocate and contributing to the community in whichever way that I can, you know. It has
Amazing.
been a journey, trust me. It has been a journey.
But it must feel so good to feel like you're on that final lap, that feeling, that realization that you said you're on the final lap. How did that feel for you?
It feels, yes, it feels good. It feels good. And I've
Mm.
always wanted to work with the community. You know, I've always wanted to work with the children. I've always wanted to work with the mothers, and I have the opportunity to work with the mothers through my show, through our, you know, our events together as a community. That gives me a fantastic feeling that I'm able to it, you know, when I was growing up, I never really had any. I never really saw, except there was one girl in secondary school. She had a cleft, but we never really like, you know, talked, or it was just from far kind of thing. So I never had that experience about, you know, talking or having a child or having a friend that had a cleft. So now, you know, and I feel, you know, if even if one child, can resonate, or if I'm able to give them hope in their journey, that already is making me feel that my fulfillment in life has completed. People ask me, Nora, why did you do the book? Why are you doing, you know, this to show? And I said, you know what, this is a calling from my creator. This is the calling from, you know, in Muslim, it's calling from the Almighty, the God, the higher powers, the universe. And if I don't do this, I don't think I would be complete as Nora Abu Hassan. So I just had to do this.
Oh, amazing. And it is, I mean, I'm sure that your ripple effect, the work that you're doing in all these different spheres is your ripple effect and the light that you are creating for children, adults, mothers all over the world. I'm sure if you saw it on a map, it would be glowing across the world, like the effect.
I really hope so, Lizzie. I
Absolutely.
really, really hope so. I said maybe some people may not be resonating with what I do. That's fine too. That's fine too. But for some, but it may be resonating. So thank you very much. And I feel blessed. I feel grateful. I'll be blessed. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And so my final question is, what is happening in your life now, and what projects are you working on at the moment and in the future, and what can people expect from you in the future as well?
Well, I am still the program partner running Madonna House of Charities, and we still have the show called Mama Nora that runs bi-monthly, and where we invite the first week is the locals, and the third week of Wednesday, the third Wednesdays of every week is, you know, people from all over the world. That's still going on. And currently I've just revisited my coaching master's certification course, and let's see where that will bring me. I kind of know where I'm going, but let's hope that it'll go where I want it to go.
I'm
And
sure
currently
it will.
you know, and we are working on a new project pertaining to the cleft. We are working on it, so I don't want to reveal too much about it, but that's something that we are planning. We're doing the strategic planning currently, yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, I can't wait to see how that all unfolds.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you once again. This has been such an empowering and emotional conversation for me as well. I've enjoyed every moment, and thank you so much for sharing your time and energy with me. And it's just been a delight talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on the show. You know, I'm so happy that you invited me, and you're doing an amazing job too, Lizzie. And I cannot tell you how much I appreciate what you're doing for the community, for the cleft community. And I really hope and looking forward to have you on my show to tell me about your story, because I think every story matters, you know, and I want everyone to be able to, like I said again, I always say that no pressure, but for those who are wanting to come and talk, I welcome them with open arms. I welcome them because I also love hearing other people's stories, because that also helps me to improve as a person. Because
Yeah.
we learn from each other every day. We learn from our peers, we learn from our friends, we learn from our children, we learn from, you know, from other people, you know. So when I hear other people's, that makes me feel, oh, okay, that's something that I didn't know as well.